Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Monday, July 23rd, 2012. I'm Mike Clifford. We have 11 stories on the rundown, including a big push that's getting underway on efforts to raise the minimum wage. We'll take a look at the role bad loans may be playing in the wealth gap for people of color and a follow-up report on that negative impact of child spanking report. Topping our news, Miami will join dozens of cities across the country in hosting rallies, marches, and other events this week to support a push for Congress to raise the minimum wage. Currently, the rate sits at $7.67 in Florida, but would be well above $10 an hour if it had kept pace with inflation. Eric Bracken, Florida director of the labor union 32BJSEIU, says it's time for America's politicians to pay attention, particularly in an election year.
If you come and ask for our vote in this hard economic time, you got to be bringing solutions to rebuild the middle class. Core to that is raising minimum wage.
The most recent bill to raise the minimum wage, H.R. 5901, was introduced last month. Florida Representative Alcee Hastings is a co-sponsor. Hundreds are expected to converge on Miami's Bayfront Park on Tuesday. That's part of the push, which will be happening all across the nation this week. Middle-class wealth is on the decline, and many say the housing bubble is the primary reason. For people of color, the decline is even worse, and experts point to unfair lending practices. We get an update on what's happening in Virginia from Monique Coppola.
Middle-class families have taken the biggest hit during the Great Recession, according to a Federal Reserve report on family wealth. Many see the decline in home values and the foreclosure crisis as the primary reasons, as home ownership is the main source of wealth for most people. Algernon Austin with the Economic Policy Institute says for people of color, the decline is even worse, as many minorities have been the targets of unfair lending practices.
Following the Federal Reserve data for African Americans, we saw the home ownership rate actually peaked in 2004, and we've been seeing a rather strong and startlingly strong decline since then.
The decline in wealth for African Americans and Latinos isn't surprising, says David Barenbaum with the National Community Reinvestment Coalition, given the lax underwriting standards of big financial institutions for home loan products.
African American and Latino consumers were often steered into products, frankly, subprime loans or non-traditional loans, when they qualified for prime, high-credit, high-quality products.
Many big banks, including Wells Fargo and Bank of America, have settled multi-million-dollar lawsuits in recent months charged with unfair lending practices that targeted minorities. I'm Monique Coppola reporting.
President Obama quoted scripture and also called on the nation's leaders to do something about senseless gun violence as he visited with survivors of last week's movie theater massacre in Aurora, Colorado. 12 were killed and 58 wounded in the rampage. GOP presidential hopeful Mitt Romney called the president's visit the right thing to do. The 24-year-old alleged shooter is expected to make his first court appearance today. It's a tense waiting game for the wind industry in Congress, a little more than 5 months left in counting, and the ticker is headed down for jobs while time passes. That's the gist of a letter to congressional leaders signed by Ohio Republican Congressman Jim Renacci about the production tax credit. Deborah Smith has the details.
Well, this is a benefit for new wind energy production that expires at the end of the year, and the benefits trickle down to manufacturers in Ohio, such as Cardinal Fastener in Bedford Heights. Company President Jeff Grabner describes what's at stake.
Jobs, jobs, and jobs. We can create jobs in the U.S. and most importantly, rebuild our economy.
He points to the tax credit's track record on jobs for the wind industry, 75,000 new positions in the past 20 years, with about 4,000 of those here in Ohio. The production tax credit has bipartisan support. However, there are also calls to let it expire. I'm Deborah Smith reporting.
Iowa is one of the states that's a top producer of wind power, with at least 5,000 jobs there connected to the industry, according to the American Wind Energy Association. Rob Hatch, with anemometry specialist in Alta, Iowa, says the bottom line is that if the credit goes away, so will jobs.
If we don't have tax credits, then we're going to have to be paying for it with unemployment. I would rather be working, putting money into the economy, than sitting there and collecting unemployment.
According to the American Wind Energy Association, letting the PTC expire will eliminate approximately 37,000 jobs nationwide. Now a look at future prospects. Kentucky could diversify its energy portfolio, increase energy security, and curb costs for consumers. That's all according to a new report. Tom Joseph fills us in.
Downstream Strategies looked at distributed renewable energy systems in the state in a study done in conjunction with the Mountain Association for Community Economic Development. Author Rory McElmoyle says the work revealed major benefits to expanded use of technologies like small-scale wind, solar photovoltaics, and solar heating.
We found that Kentucky has enough resources to use current existing technologies to generate 34% of their electricity demand by 2025.
McElmoyle says energy diversification can also spur the creation of jobs by the thousands in Kentucky. The Kentucky Sustainable Energy Alliance has supported the Clean Energy Opportunity Act, which would advance policies aimed at boosting distributed energy in the past two legislative sessions. I'm Tom Joseph reporting.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture has a program specifically designed to help minority groups. It's commonly referred to by its original statute number, the 2501 program. With Congress deliberating the Farm Bill this summer, Tim Morrissey tells us about a Native American tribe in Wisconsin that's very concerned about that program continuing.
The program awards funds to socially disadvantaged farmers and ranchers. Jeff Metoxin runs the Integrated Food Systems Project for the Oneida Nation, which involves poultry and organic vegetable production. When they applied for the funds a few years ago, they were running their operation out of a tent.
We are looking at a processing unit, a facility, a building, to help us in the bird processing. We work with poultry and we butcher on site, as well as a station that could be utilized with our organic vegetable production.
The program has allowed them to build a facility which gets year-round daily use. Metoxin says the facility has helped the tribe ensure food stability and a healthier lifestyle. He says it's been a great boon to younger members of the tribe.
They're very interested in agriculture, and I think they're always looking for better ways. So I feel they're looking for that more natural selection or sustainability process, and they're interested in going in that direction of how they could do their own food.
The facility is on Riverdale Drive in Oneida, and it's completely open to the public. Metoxin says with so many farmers retiring, they want to help beginning farmers, whether they're tribal members or not, get into the marketplace. I'm Tim Morrissey reporting.
For those of us who tend to look at the calendar a bit less during the summer, you may be surprised to know that the fall elections are now just over 3 months away. And in Minnesota, we get a report from John Michelson that control of the state legislature is one of the things that will be up for grabs this fall.
The Political Action Committee of the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees has already endorsed 104 candidates for the state legislature. PAC Chair Kerry Wassley says they believe each and every race is important.
This is a really hot political year because of the presidential election all the way down.
All 201 state House and Senate seats are on the ballot this fall with control of the legislature at stake. Republicans currently hold majorities in both chambers.
Just 1 month into summer, Pennsylvania has already dealt with a number of heat waves. Another one may be shaping up this week. Dr. Amanda Stout, climate scientist with the National Wildlife Federation, calls it another sign of climate change brought on by the burning of fossil fuels and other contributing factors.
Since the 1950s, the number of heat waves across the world has increased. The heat waves are longer. The hottest days and nights are hotter and more frequent. So it's a pattern that we're seeing in places like Philadelphia and places around the world.
Opponents of climate change theory say our climate is always changing and will continue to, but not to the extent that life on Earth will be threatened anytime soon. The National Wildlife Federation says global warming is changing habitats and having serious effects on the animals, plants, and wildlife that live within them. Over the last few weeks, Indiana children have died in sweltering cars, drowned in drainage ponds, and been found roaming without supervision. To prevent these deadly situations, overwhelmed parents and caretakers need to reach out, and so do their friends and neighbors. We get a report from Lee DeNoon.
Sandy Runkle-DeLorme of Prevent Child Abuse Indiana says just as people check in on their elderly neighbors in the extreme heat, they should also offer to help overwhelmed parents.
Families, you know, they do appreciate the offer, and at least they know, even if they say no the first time, at least they know, hey, this person reached out to me, so I know that they care, or I know that maybe I could go to them, you know, if I do need help.
She says anyone, anywhere in the state can call 1-800-CHILDREN to find resources. She adds in rural areas with fewer options, faith-based communities and other organizations need to step up to make sure that kids are supervised and have things to do. I'm Lee Dinoon.
Authorities say that neglect, whether intended or not, can have devastating short- and long-term consequences. Spanking has been a mainstay in the discipline regimen for many parents for generations. However, there's a new collection of data. We first told you about it last week. It comes from the American Academy of Pediatrics. It says that spanking children can lead to adult mental illnesses. Bo Bradshaw has a follow-up report.
Parents have historically disciplined their children by spanking, but a new report from the American Academy of Pediatrics says there's a significant link between children who are disciplined with harsh physical punishment and the increased likelihood that those same children will develop mental health disorders as adults. Lou Hennessian, author and founder of Parent to Parent U, says the report is not a surprise.
Frequent spanking and physical corporal punishment that hurts the child or creates fear in the child enormously raises the risk of that child developing mental health issues later in life.
The analyzed data was from multiple government surveys of more than 35,000 U.S. adults. Hennessian says the report is based on scientific data that shows a direct link to increased odds of mood disorders, anxiety disorders, alcohol and drug abuse, and several personality disorders. I'm Bo Bradshaw reporting.
Finally, the AAP says, from a public health perspective, that reducing physical punishment may help decrease the prevalence of mental disorders in the general population. I'm Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.